Welcome to Reawakening Love and Power with Carol Ann. I am delighted to bring you this passionate and life-affirming conversation with Amy Tal on reclaiming the pleasurable and reproductive parts of our bodies, particularly for those of us who identify as women, and how these parts of us are natural and powerful, and what happens in our lived experience when we go there. Some of what we discuss applies to anyone with a vulva, vagina, and uterus, and it still applies even if you've had a hysterectomy or similar procedure. And some of what we talk about applies to anyone who was socialized as a girl and as a woman. The day this episode is released is also the one-year anniversary of this podcast. Honestly, I am so proud of Reawakening Love and Power with Carol Ann. And when I feel into this milestone, I have a big smile on my face and a rising, swelling feeling in my heart. I have grateful, warm and fuzzies thinking about all the guests who have been and will be on this podcast. And of course, to all of you listening, I hope it is bringing you exactly what you need. If you'd like to offer me a podcast birthday present, I'd love to hear one thing from this podcast that has touched you. And you can send that in anywhere you can find me, including my website contact page, Instagram, or you can send in a voice message using the link at the bottom of the episode description. Amy Tal is the creator of Temple of She, a space only for the willing woman. Amy supports women to be practitioners in the revolution of the feminine. As a yoni massage practitioner and trainer, certified intuitive guide, and registered midwife, Amy has over a decade of experience working with women in a powerful yet vulnerable exploration. After experiencing a 21st century witch hunt within midwifery, Amy felt compelled to explore the untapped power women hold in their pussies. It was this that held her head above water while she discovered who she really was. Women hold a key they are terrified to access, and that key unlocks their power, full presence, and pleasure. Amy loves to push the envelope, get deep and dirty into the taboos of our world. She holds your hand while pushing you to get uncomfortable. She'll hold the mirror while you look at your vulva, and she will also give you one of the best hugs you've ever had. So, Amy, it's a pleasure to have you here to share this conversation today. Thank you for joining me.
Thank you so much for asking me. I always love these opportunities because any time to talk about what I'm passionate about is just, yeah, I'm more than happy to do. So thank you very much for having me.
Yeah. I love the aspect of the conversation too. It always feels like it's so much richer when I'm having a conversation with someone and we can bring our wisdom together. It kind of amplifies it, whereas I feel like when I'm just talking by myself, it has a different quality.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, a lot comes from women talking together.
So I wanted to start actually by asking you a little bit about language and what kind of words we use to talk about the vagina and the vulva and your areas of expertise. So I'm curious why you choose to use the word yoni and what that means to you.
Yeah, absolutely. Oh, where do I begin? I think language is loaded. It is such a big thing, and we really don't have enough emphasis on it, or we underestimate it in our day-to-day lives and society. And, you know, for that reason, in one of my online courses, we do a whole module on language and unpacking language and unpacking how words make us feel or, there's so much around language, and especially when it comes to women and or those who identify as women and expressing your sexual power, your sexual energy, your sexuality, all of that. There's so much taboo around it, and there's so much dirt, if you like, around words associated with that type of expression. So it's like, I think it's a really important thing to look at and explore. And And I use a lot of words for a lot of different words for my anatomy, and it kind of changes depending on the context. So in terms of the word yoni, I offer yoni massage, and I teach women to be yoni massage practitioners. And I sat with that for a long time. I was like, do I use the word yoni? And if I do, why? And when I learnt the modality, it was taught to me as yoni massage. And so yoni, of course, is a Sanskrit word. It's a very ancient, sacred Sanskrit word, which in translation to English means sacred cave, the literal translation. And so it's a word that encompasses the whole of the reproductive anatomy. So it includes everything: the uterus, the fallopian tubes, the ovaries, the cervix, the vaginal canal, the vulva, the clitoris, the labia, all of it. Whereas there's no word in the English language that very clearly depicts that entire area. So I couldn't really come up with an alternative to replace it with. So I sat for a while, you know, is this cultural appropriation? Is it okay for me to use this word? It's not a part of my culture or history or heritage. Where does this sit? And then I kind of felt like, for me, one of the biggest issues with cultural appropriation is when people take something that is original and they change it to suit our Western culture by renaming it or, you know, redefining it. I thought, it is what it is. And yoni massage is this ancient art which I have learnt and teach. So I felt it, for me, it was more respectful to keep the word yoni and to label it, if you like, as that, as opposed to vaginal massage, which isn't what it is, or pussy massage, which isn't what it is. Or so that for me was a very big part in consciously choosing to keep calling it yoni massage. And I use the word yoni in the context, I suppose, when I'm referring to the sacredness of this aspect of our bodies. But then I also, you know, I use the word pussy because I just think that is so loaded with power. And for me, the word pussy is so much about reclamation. And it's really about, fuck you, I am taking this back. This is my pussy. And, you know, and so I think, you know, and the same with cunt and all of those words, like I think they each have their place to be used with power and reclamation and strength for a woman, and to take that shame and the derogatory connotations that have come to them out of them. And, you know, it, like, and it goes on and on and on, like slut, and like there's no word that positively describes a woman who enjoys pleasure. In the English language, there's none. She's a slut, whore, prostitute, whatever. So it's really about looking at the words that we have chosen in the English language that we use today to talk about, describe women's sexual expression and sexual power, and then actually how do they make us feel? What do they bring up when we say them or use them? And I think it's about really giving the full weight that each word deserves in its place. And so for me, that's why yoni was so important to keep in the work that I do, particularly in Temple of She, and because it is ancient. It's connected to so much ritual and ceremony, and it's just, it felt like it would be wrong to not honour it for its history and what it is, and the work that I do. So that was kind of, it was a very much a process and a conscious choice to use that language to describe the work that I do now.
Yeah, I really appreciate the depth of consideration and thoughtfulness there. And I regularly lament how we don't have the right words in the English language to encapsulate some of these things, like the wholeness of the whole, all of the reproductive anatomy, everything in the pelvic bowl, and nothing that also carries the sacredness or like you said, that describes with reverence and joy, a woman who just loves pleasure.
Yeah.
And it's reflective. I mean, the language reflects the culture, doesn't it?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. And that's why I think reclamation, particularly with language, is so important, and redefining what these words mean, and you know, making slut not a bad word, or something that you say to put a woman down, but it's actually a type of power that she has.
When just before we pressed record, we were listening in if there was a part of our body that had a message to share in this conversation. And for me, it was my womb. I'm on day 3 of my cycle right now, so I'm currently bleeding, and my womb was like, power. And this is a power, not a curse. Those are the words that I got. And I think it's so important to find ways to use language to reflect that, because even the ways that we culturally talk about having a period, it's, you know, it's the curse being on your rag, or like, you know, it's very dismissive or derogatory.
Absolutely. That's such a big thing. It's for women and their relationship with our bleed, for people who bleed, and it's so, we're taught from a very young age it's a burden, that it is the curse, that it's awful, it's horrible, it's painful, it's inconvenient, it's all of those things. And part of the work I do with women is that process of replacing the sacredness of it, and reclaiming that sacredness. Like, actually, what is happening in your body every month, or whatever your cycle is?
Yeah.
You know, let's go into that. Let's look at that. And you know, looking that symptoms are actually not normal, and pain and lethargy and all of those things, and massive clots and hemorrhaging and all of that every month is not normal. And that's actually your body speaking to you, and there's something bigger going on there. And it's such a powerful thing. Like, women bleed every month, and you know, it's coming from our sacred center, our womb. And I see it as this reminder. It's kind of like this monthly alarm bell. Remember how powerful you are. And it's something. I mean, there's so much you can do with it and embrace it, and it's just, yeah, there's so much there to be reclaimed that we just don't.
And you use the word reclaim a lot, and the name of this podcast includes the word reawakening, because it's that same idea that there's all of this power and pleasure and natural I don't know exactly what the word is, but there's a natural power that is latent in us. And I believe that it's there. We've just lost touch with it. So it's about getting back into the body and our sensual sexual lives, and waking that back up, because it's not like, I need to go get that thing from out there, and I need to go get sexiness and bring it back into my body. It's not out there.
Exactly.
It's just sleeping inside.
That's what I talk about, this innate wisdom, I suppose, if you like, that is within us. And it's, it is there. It's dormant in a lot of us, but it's there. And it's, that's why finding a healer or whatever is not the answer, because it's never going to lead you to where you need to go. It's a woman, I think, particularly for any person who is pursuing their sexual freedom and sexual expression and their sexual power, it's got to come from that place within.
Yeah.
Just because it's nowhere else.
And, I imagine that you'll agree, but that the role of a practitioner is to help you find that in yourself, not to have all of the answers for you.
Absolutely.
So I'm curious to hear you talk a little bit more about that, like the role, because you train massage practitioners, what you see as being the role of a good practitioner versus what the role is of someone, what their responsibility is for themselves.
Yeah, absolutely. That's, you know, that's one of the very first things I say to women when they choose to come forward to train with Temple of She is that I am not training you to be a healer. Mm. And, you know, I say to them, if I ever see you call yourself a healer in your marketing and advertising, look out. Because that's not what you're being trained to do.
Yeah, yeah.
I very much stand for, you know, reaching outside of yourself is never the answer. Mm. And as a practitioner, you are being unethical if you are saying to your clients, I can do this for you. Mm-hmm. Come to me and we'll fix this. Come to me and we'll heal this. Mm-hmm. You know, and I think that that's so irresponsible. And that was one of the reasons that I created the training in the first place, is because this industry of neo-tantra and tantric bodywork is completely unregulated. There's no standards. There's no, you know, criteria that you have to meet, nothing. And for me, that wasn't okay. I was like, why are women putting up with this shit? It's not okay. And so I wanted to bring standard into the work. And, you know, and for that reason, I say I train high standard practitioners. And part of that is because we go into the ethics behind this work. Mm-hmm. We go into what you are actually doing for women. Mm. And so a big part of it is recognizing what are you actually doing as a yoni massage practitioner? What are you actually doing? Mm-hmm. And, you know, so we talk a lot about letting go of your agenda as a practitioner. Mm-hmm. That is a big, 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 big thing. Getting over yourself as a practitioner. It's not about you, you know. And so many practitioners, especially in the way that the spiritual world is now, there's a lot of wankery.
Yeah.
A lot. Yeah. And it's very much about the practitioners. And so one thing that I really drum into my practitioners, it's not about you.
Yeah.
It's not about you at all. Let go of your ego. There is no goal. There is no agenda in this space. You know, we don't make women orgasm. We don't, you know, strive to make this happen. We don't want to make her cry. Then you know you've done a good job. Like, no. Mm. I talk a lot about Bhuvaneshwari. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you've heard of Bhuvaneshwari, but she's is this goddess who is the ultimate space holder. And, you know, I know, again, holding space is one of those things that's become a little bit cliche and commercialized in spirituality. But Bhuvaneshwari is this container that just holds, and she has no chance after her. She has no stories or credit, if you like. She just does her job, and she holds the entire universe in her arms. Mm. She provides the scaffolding for the magic to take place in the middle. And for me, that is what my practitioner's job is to do. Your job is to create the physical space and then be in that space to provide the container to support that person in whatever way they need you to.
Yeah.
And that's going to look different for every single client that comes to you.
Yeah.
You know, and I say to my practitioners, be prepared that you're going to have some clients that come to you and you never actually touch her yoni. And that's okay, because that's exactly what she needs.
Yeah.
So it's really about tailoring your work, meeting the client where they're at, letting go of the agenda, and recognizing that you're not doing anything. You are holding the space for that client to come in and have the experience that they need to have with where they're at on their journey. Putting them back in the driver's seat. For me, that's what this work is about. It's about putting our clients back in the driver's seat. Self-responsibility. Oh, self-responsibility is so huge, so huge. And it's something that so many of us hate because it's hard and it's icky and it's not fun.
Yeah.
But it's the only way. So it's about putting your client back in the driver's seat and say, okay, so what are you going to do with your pain? What are you going to do about this? How are you going to move through this? And allowing them the opportunity to actually take control, often for some people, for the first time ever. And that is where the healing happens. That is where the transformation happens. That is where the shift happens. And that is what makes it permanent, as opposed to this really nice feel-good experience that was temporary.
Yes.
That I'm not interested in. It's like, why waste people's time and money?
Yeah, yeah.
That's not what we're here for as humans in this 3D world. So it's about what can we do to create a permanent shift?
Mm-hmm.
That is the priority for my practitioners. So I hope that answers the question.
Yeah. I just feel so much yes to all of that. Oh, I don't even know where to start. I use the word guide a lot, but there was a moment when you were describing Bhuvaneshwari holding the whole world that it almost brought tears to my eyes, just feeling an aspect of the divine with that capacity of holding. It touched something kind of nonverbal in me.
Absolutely. Yeah. And that feeling is what Bhuvaneshwari is. It's it's that deep holding like nothing else.
I think one of the most healing things that we can do as practitioners is really cultivate our way of being with them and our loving presence, and that focusing on that rather than having all the right answers, as you described. And then when the answers, there's such a big difference between telling someone this is what you need to do versus guiding someone to a space where they realize it for themselves. And it sticks more. Often I find it's slower work.
Yeah. Definitely.
When you're not pushing your own agenda or your own answers, that to trust in it being a gradual process.
Yeah, absolutely.
But that slow and steady, and not necessarily linear, like it can look like, you know, cyclical.
Nothing linear about
So I'm not picturing like a turtle going slowly and steadily in a straight line, but it's more like a quality of I just felt like my belly softened. like it's okay for it to be gradual and not have immediate mind-blowing shifts, because sometimes you get those moments, but other times you're just laying the foundation.
Absolutely. And I think one of the things, again, with the way that our spiritual world, for want of a better word, it's created this addiction to the experience. It's like I only get the shift, or it's only real and true if I get this massive mind-blowing, whoa, experience. And so we're constantly seeking that, and we don't recognize that shifts are actually happening in other ways, in more subtle ways, and allowing and kind of just breathing into them and recognizing them for what they are. And so especially with yoni massage, because it's such a big experience, it's such a vulnerable, powerful thing to do. It's some women who come, they're literally coming for the big mind-blowing experience, because you know that's what's gonna change my life. So it's really important, I think, to acknowledge the subtleties that can be just as much, if not more, powerful than those big experiences. Absolutely.
And that makes me think of, I like to look at things with the seasonal framework a lot, and I associate like a big experience, or even the way that we get focused on an orgasm, that's kind of like the peak of summertime. It's like wanting everything to look like the summer solstice.
All of the time.
But I find that like a lot of what has been helpful for me and helpful for the people I work with is like noticing when you're in maybe autumn moving into winter time and it looks like nothing is happening, but trusting that on a deeper level, your subconscious mind, your body is like integrating all of the things that you've been focusing on. It's like going in there with, you know, little weavers, kind of one strand at a time, weaving it into the fabric of your being. But it doesn't look like a big experience, but you have to go through that to get to the you can't bypass winter to get to summer.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah, that's exactly right. And that's what a lot of us would prefer, is that bypassing, it's part of the process. Yeah.
And like you were saying, I think there's a lot in the so-called spiritual community that is capitalism and ego and all sorts of the, you know, patriarchy, all sorts of those things, just with the spiritual mask on.
Yeah.
It takes a lot of discernment, really, to navigate what is true and what is supportive versus what is just the same old shit in a different disguise.
Yeah, absolutely. Definitely. And I think especially for people who are quite new to spirituality and wanting to explore, there's so much out there. It's like, it's all the, you know, rainbows and unicorns and the distractions and, oh, wow, and this and that, and I can do this and that, and there's so much out there. But, yeah, it's a real discipline, I think, to discern exactly, as you said, what is right for me and who is right for me to work with.
I think your body provides a lot of clues.
Yeah.
Definitely. There, but it's also learning to discern and speak your body's language is a skill too.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, hugely. And it comes back to what we were saying before, that innate knowing that we hold. It's learning to lean into that and learning to hear the voice of that and allowing it to become louder, especially when we don't want it to be. And just really, you know, because we all love our spirituality when things are good, but when things are hard and bad, we don't want to hear it. It's like, it's hard. And but that's why it's you know, one of my greatest mentors talks about, you know, it's like a muscle. You've got to work that muscle so that it's strong enough so that you can lean into it when you need it.
So that it comes more naturally.
Yeah.
When you need it too. Yeah. How do you personally discern what is your innate wisdom versus what is something that's coming from fear or your thinking mind or some other agenda?
Well, I think the first thing that kind of comes to mind for me to answer that is that if it's not that intuition, if it's not that innate knowing, it's chaos, basically. And I think I've really lent into this in a whole new way in this pregnancy because it, of course, being my first baby, it's like it's a huge fucking learning curve. Even though I'm a midwife, I've been a midwife for 14 years, but, you know, doing it for yourself is a whole other thing. And I'm really, really in awe of the level of responsibility that it actually is growing a human being and what that means and the decisions that you have to make and the level that you have to lean into that innate knowing. Like you actually don't have a choice. So there's been times where it's quite tumultuous because the fear has come in instead. And then I find myself in this place of chaos where I can't sleep properly. I get, you know, really upset and it's like, oh, God, I don't know what to do. And the stress just goes into overdrive. And then thankfully, because of the work that I've done, it doesn't last very long. And I can recognize, okay, hang on. We've gone into that state of chaos, which means the fear's crept in and taken over. Take a breath, step back. Let's look at what's happening here. And I also am very fortunate to have surrounded myself with people in my world that are very They're my medicine. They're my support. Yes. They can slap me around and say, get perspective. So I think that for me is the biggest telltale. It's, you know, and I always say this, that our intuition is instant, whereas the fear is the second guesser.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like when you have that moment of knowing and then even a split second later is, oh, but blah, 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 blah. Oh, but what about this? Blah, 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 blah. That's the fear, the ego coming in then to kind of rewrite the program.
Mm-hmm.
That very first initial reaction, if you like, that is that intuition, that innate wisdom, that knowing. And if we mm-hmm. can just allow ourselves to go with that, mm-hmm. we can avoid the chaos.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I like that. I find for me, one of the telltales is like the tone of voice that comes with it, or like the tone of feeling that comes with it. Something that's more of an innate knowing or intuition will be calm and steady and just like,
absolutely,
this is it. This is what you need to know.
Yeah.
Whereas if it's coming more from fear or anxiety or something else, it's like, it's very like repetitive and loud. Like, you got to do this. You got to do this. You got to do this.
Absolutely. Yeah. Which, yeah, it kind of heightens all those negative responses. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
So listening to that tone of voice or tone of feeling. I know different people's kind of inner worlds come in different forms. Yeah. Like some people are more visually oriented, some are more language or feeling.
Absolutely. Yeah.
But I also find that if I'm having a hard time discerning, spaciousness helps, which is like having a little bit of time.
Yeah.
Maybe being outside or like putting the phone down or just creating a little bit of space to kind of, sometimes I have to let the fear or the anxious voice run its program and go, okay, I hear you. That's one piece of information. Now what else is there? And then when I get them out in front of me, I can go, oh, okay, I think I know which one is which.
Yeah, absolutely. And that, you know, that's what I mean about like perspective. It's really about the perspective and being able to step back and looking at it all and looking at the fear and the ego. It's like, okay, yeah, I acknowledge you, but that's not actually what I need right now.
You also said something about how your support people are your medicine. And I think that's sometimes we can emphasize. I think personal responsibility is important, but sometimes we emphasize it so much that we think we have to do it all on our own. And like you said, you've been a midwife for other people for so long, but it's totally different doing it for yourself. And I've been finding, especially within the past few months where I've been feeling challenged, leaning into the support from my friends has helped so much. Like being willing to ask for support and receive it. And I do the same for them. But just having those people in my life who do not reflexively try to fix it or solve it unless I'm asking for that. And who can really hear me and empathize and love me and help me to see more clearly through all of that is just invaluable. And that includes my partner as well, but it's different. It's also, I think it's good to have a network of people rather than one person who has to be everything for
you. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I think, and it's okay that changes, you know, it has cycles and flows as well within itself and the people that we surround ourselves with. And, yeah, absolutely. I think it's so important. And I've really acknowledged that I have done a lot of work to surround myself with those kind of people who you know, they don't need to fix me or fix what I'm experiencing. They're happy to witness me and to be there for me and to give me whatever it is I ask for or say that I need or because it's, you know, everyday relationships can be quite the opposite.
Yeah.
and it can be hard to move away from those and to to kind of change those, the way that those relationships are a priority in your life. And mm-hmm. But yeah, for me, it just got to a point where it was non-negotiable. It's like, well, this is how I need to live my life now. So it's the way it is. Mm. Yeah.
And it's becoming that person for your friends as well. The more that you can embody that, the more that you can resonate with it and recognize it in other people and form Absolutely. Relationships based on that.
Yeah, definitely. Mm. Yeah, mm. very important. It's, yeah, and especially because, you know, things happen in life. Things. Yeah. And there's times, like I said, where we don't like our spirituality, but we need those people there who can keep that perspective and maintain that space for you to have the breakdown, meltdown, breakthrough, whatever you want to call it.
Yeah.
And to kind of help you get through to the other side.
Yeah. We're designed, we evolved to be social creatures.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That's part of our very nature.
Mm. Yeah, absolutely. Connection. Yeah. Very important. Mm.
Mm. So coming back to sexuality and our bodies, I'd love to talk a little bit more about taboo and how sexuality, sensuality, for those of us who have pussies and yonis and vaginas and vulvas, and menstrual cycles or any kind of combination of those things, how we have become disconnected from them, how those things have become taboo, and what does that actually look like, and what does it look like to bring it back into our lives? That's a very big question.
it's huge. It's everything that's wrong with the world, basically.
I know.
In a nutshell.
Look, I love a good rant about the patriarchy. So if that's where this goes, I'm cool with it. But also, I do love a good rant about the patriarchy, but as I was articulating that, the word that was coming back to me was power. And how it's
absolutely.
In being disconnected from
what
happens when we work with the changes in our menstrual cycle. What happens when we say yes to pleasure and enjoying our senses, enjoying our bodies, enjoying sex, and how that brings so much more vitality and power into our lives.
Yeah,
focusing on that is probably more productive energy than just
that's right. I think you know we live in a world where girls or young vagina owners are raised from day one really to disconnect. It's all around us, it's everywhere, it's in everything that we do, say, hear. It's everywhere. And you know, as they move through puberty, girls are taught about periods, boys are taught about wet dreams. So from that point, boys are taught about pleasure, girls are taught about the burdens of their body. So, you know, even from the beginning, we don't teach our women and our girls that pleasure is their birthright, that sexual expression and power is who they are. And, you know, thankfully there are some women out there now teaching their children and leading by example, but it definitely is not the majority, and it definitely is not across all cultures and households. So it's really about women have to relearn who they are or what they are and what that means. And, you know, it creates a lot of confusion, it creates a lot of disconnect, it creates a lot of harm. Really, because it's, you know, then we start to believe that we're faulty, we're broken, we look at porn, which, you know, I'm not going to go there because that's a whole other podcast, but that, you know, it has its pros and cons, but one of them is that it teaches us a false representation of how sex should be. It doesn't work like that. So we then build these false expectations of how I should be able to perform in my sexuality.
Yeah.
You know, it's the same as when Playboy started putting frontal images of vulvas in their pictures in the 50s or 60s, I think from memory, in the magazines. And they found that vulvas that had flappy labia were too graphic. So they only found women who had sort of the neatly childlike vulvas because that was more acceptable to start putting into the public eye. From that moment on, that never changed.
Yeah, even just hearing that brings like a burning anger into my chest.
Yeah, exactly. So from
but anger is a normal response to that because it's not right.
That's exactly right. Yeah. Exactly right. So, you know, from that moment, every vagina owner was taught, unless you have a neatly little tucked in childlike vagina, yours is wrong. So now we live in a world where what does that look like? Where labiaplasty is one of the fastest growing elective surgeries in the Western world. And, you know, there's so many issues with that. Labiaplasty doctors really have no idea what they're doing. There's very little research around the female anatomy. If you go to textbooks, there's an incredible woman whose name has just left my brain. Whose sole purpose is to get extensive female anatomy into medical textbooks because it's not there.
Even the full structure of the clitoris is not been there, right?
So surgeons are going in and operating on this anatomy knowing very little about it. So women are having labiaplasties. They're being left with neat, tidy vaginas that don't work. They're full of scar tissue. They're loss of sensation. Their orgasms are completely disappearing because we have a medical profession that doesn't really know the best way to serve these women. So that's one of the ways that it looks being in a world of women who are disconnected. You know, the other is look around. The one of the biggest pandemics, if you like, that's happening in our world is gynecological issues. We have more women now with endometriosis, endometritis, polycystic ovarian syndrome, horrendous periods, hysterectomies left, right, and center. It's everywhere because we have disconnected ourselves from birth to our power, and our power as women lays in our womb, in our pelvic bowl. You know, the vagus nerve runs down the spinal column, connects the heart to the uterus, and it's, you know, there's a lot of work by the HeartMath Institute that has proven scientifically that our heart is our primary brain, not our cranial brain. And our heart is directly connected to our uterus. So uterus owners have this unique, special amplification of their heart's intelligence that other people don't. And, you know, and that comes back to that. That's what that innate knowing is. That's it right there. So switching that on is life-changing. Switching it off is also life-changing because you get this overwhelming of all sorts of things, physical symptoms, hormonal imbalances. You know, and again, we live in a world where medical profession doesn't know what to do about it. We don't know how to deal with it. Menopause. We don't know how to deal with it. We just don't know. So the, you know, the most common things are treat it with a pill or cut it out. So, you know, hysterectomy is like, I have a lot of thoughts and feelings on hysterectomies. yes, sometimes they're very, very warranted. Majority of the time they are not. They are the only solution that the medical profession can think of. So therefore let's give it a crack. You know, even the history of hysterectomy, like even the language, again, going back to language around hysterectomy, it comes from the word hysteria and this idea that women have a wandering womb. So when she gets emotional or postnatal depression or she's gone a little bit crazy or whatever, it's because her womb is literally wandering around her body. And it has to be placed back into where it came from, hence the invention of the vibrator. And, you know, because she's hysterical, So they started to do hysterectomies to take the hysteria out of woman. And that language has stuck. Today, in 2020, women are having the hysteria cut out of them because doctors don't know what else to do.
Yeah.
You know, why isn't it called a uterectomy? Like every other organ when it's, you know, named and labeled for its surgery. So, you know, that I think to me that's what a world looks like when a, when women are disconnected from their power. Look around.
And like you said before, it's not normal. It's common. It's very common, but it's not normal. It's not to say that anyone who's has those experiences and is listening, it's not saying that there's something wrong with you. It's saying that the culture that we live in is sick.
It doesn't support you. And I think, you know, and as a practitioner, I have women coming to me all the time with these things because they recognize there's a disconnect. And it's like, okay, what can I do about this? How can I start to foster this connection again? And I think one of the most powerful things for women to know and understand is that there's been research done. There's a particular type of photography, I can't remember what it's called, it starts with K, it's a great big long word, it's scientific photography. And what they do is they've taken photos of structures, everything from, you know, flowers, plants, animals, humans, where they have a piece cut out of the center. So say, for example, you've got a leaf, you've cut a hole out of the center of the leaf. They take a photo of the leaf, and what it shows is that the structural DNA is still there. The leaf is whole. It is complete. It doesn't matter what you remove, the energetic DNA remains the same. And I think that's so important, and it demonstrates how powerful we really are. It doesn't matter if you cut out your uterus.
Yes.
It still remains.
Yes.
That power center, that energy is still there.
Yes.
You still have it. And I think that's so important for women to know. Yeah. That even if, you know, if you are struggling because you have had a hysterectomy or a cervical biopsy or something, the energetic blueprint, the DNA structure is still the same.
It cannot be destroyed.
No, it cannot. It cannot. And, you know, I've had women have the most incredible experiences in yoni massage where we have had, you know, we've worked energetically where the cervix physically used to be, but energetically is still very present. And it's I think that's so important for women to remember. It's despite what is happening in this disconnected world, our power is actually so strong and so sturdy that it can't be shifted.
It cannot be destroyed. It can be buried and hidden and shamed, but it cannot be destroyed.
Absolutely. So I think, you know, looking at what, like your the part B to that question, like what would it look like if we were connected? I mean, the possibilities are endless. You know, a woman who stands in her power is undeniable. She is unfuckwithable. She knows who she is. She knows what she's worthy of. She creates the life she desires. So it, for me, it's represented by a woman who can use her voice. She can speak up and ask for what she desires, what she needs, without hesitation. And, you know, in every aspect of her life, in sex, in intimacy, in business, in money, in her family, in her relationships, and in social circumstances, it's and a woman, you know, you can imagine if all women were like that. Oh, what a different place it would be, you know, because as I say that, I can feel like there's that uncomfortableness with, you know, the bossy woman or the, the, you know, that sort of shit. But if you could imagine if every woman was just innately like that.
As I hear you describe that, what I feel rising up in me is like, yes, I am here for this revolution. Like, this is what I will devote my life to.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And that's what I say to my practitioners. You have signed up to become a leader of the feminine revolution. That's what this is about. This and that's why, you know, visibility as a yoni massage practitioner is so important. You can't do this work and hide.
Mm-hmm.
Not possible. So it's very much about women being seen and women stepping into who they really are. Yeah. That is what connecting with your sacred center is about.
Yeah.
Who are you really?
Yeah.
And how are you going to show up as her?
Yeah. 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 No, I just feel this like almost like a humming, excited energy in my belly, in my pelvic bowl and around my heart that's kind of humming with the energy of yes.
Yeah, yeah, it's very powerful. It's very powerful. And it resonates, you know, and that's that response is it resonates with us because it's our true nature.
Mm. Mm-hmm. Yes. Yes. I also think of it like, and reflecting on my own experience over my life, the shift from being externally referenced. So always looking outside of yourself to see who am I expected to be here? What am I supposed to say? What am I supposed to look like? What do these people think I should do? What do my parents think I should do? What does the priest think I should do? What do my teachers think I should do? What does the magazine think I should do? What does the movie say I should do? What does the porn say I should do?
Yeah.
And contorting yourself habitually to all of that. And it's exhausting and it's anxiety inducing because it's impossible to do it perfectly. You will never satisfy everyone else, but you can die trying.
Yeah.
Literally.
Yeah. Yeah. A lot of people do. Yeah. Yeah.
But it feels to me like it is the shift from all of this reaching outwards to, it feels like a tectonic shift of drawing that energy back into your own body. I use the language a lot of inhabiting your own body.
Yeah.
And feeling inside for what feels true to me.
Yeah.
What do I want to do? What feels in alignment to me? What feels good to me? What do I want to create? And I think you've indicated this earlier, but it's that fear of not belonging comes up a lot in that process. If I inhabit who I feel I am, if I live this way from the inside, I might not belong anymore. People might reject me. And the truth is, there will be places, there will be people with whom I won't belong anymore. And that hurts.
Yeah.
But it's the choice between, am I going to give up belonging to myself for the sake of belonging with others as someone who I'm not really.
Yeah.
It's a terrible choice to have to make, but I think that when you choose that true belonging with yourself and being in alignment, you find places and you find people and you find where you do belong. That's and right. there's Also, I find when you connect to sensual and sexual pleasure, even if it's just like the feeling of stroking your skin, of enjoying the feeling of the sun on your face, of smelling. I'm that person who's like, every time I walk past a lavender plant or a rosemary plant or a rose bush or anything that smells, I have to rub it and sniff it.
Yeah, absolutely.
Delighting in your body and having access to your own turn on and sexual pleasure.
Yeah.
That is such food for our bodies. It gives us energy and guts and
absolutely. Yeah.
That is,
it's fuel.
It's fuel for it. It kind of feeds you to stick with it. I think when it feels good to be true to yourself and to be in your body this way, it's easier to stay true to yourself. Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely. I couldn't agree more. It's just, it's, you know, we have this incredible tool at our disposal to heighten that connection and to help ourselves process and be present and create and do all of those things. And so, you know, why not use it? It's, well, I know why not, but it has so much potential for what it can do for us.
I think instead of why not, the question is, now that you know that it's possible, why wouldn't you choose it?
Yeah, absolutely. That shame and that, rejection, the ego and embarrassment, all of that, like there's so many layers and it's so deeply entrenched, especially because, as I said before, you know, we're taught that from the very beginning. To fear that. And so it takes a lot of courage.
It does.
To go against that and to decide to shift it.
Yes. There's a lot of guilt and shame in my history. I grew up Catholic, and I think for a variety of reasons, I really sought belonging and safety in learning what all the rules were and sticking to them as closely as I could.
That's what a good girl does.
I was a very good girl. and then the feelings of shame and guilt in my body were so uncomfortable. But I can kind of talk about it now without it's not to say that I never feel shame or guilt, but I've digested a lot of those emotions, and so it doesn't have much power over me anymore. It's something that can be shifted over time.
As opposed to completely rigid and solid. Absolutely. Oh, I know. If I had a dollar for every time one of my clients started a sentence with, "So I was raised Catholic." You're like, right, okay, here we go. Yep. it's very prominent. Huge.
Oh, man.
Yeah, a good girl. The good old good girl has a lot to answer for.
Are there any other, like, less obvious ways that you see that sex and sensuality have been removed from our lives that you would love to see it brought back in?
I think in a way, every single aspect of our lives, like, it has been removed from every single aspect of our lives. And it's become such a judged thing. You know, a way a woman dresses. A way she expresses herself, a way she dances. Even, like, I remember years ago I did this incredible retreat process with Dancing Eros. I don't know if you've heard of, but it's amazing, life-changing. And I remember the story that the facilitator told us, and that they had this – something to do with the finances of the business, and there was a big win, and they were ahead and something, and they went to the bank and they were talking to the bank manager about it, and they were doing it in the way that they do, very sexually expressive, a lot of body touching, a lot of boob groping, a lot of and the bank manager was like, what the fuck is going on here? And they, you know, they laughed and commented on the way he received their freedom in expressing their pleasure and joy at their financial situation. And it was just, it was so, I'll never forget that. It's like just the way that it was so confronting. That even just about money, a woman could joyfully express her pleasure was like, what's happening here? So I think, you know, it's when a woman feels comfortable in her skin and in her sex, it flows into everything.
Yes.
You know, it flows into how you exercise, how you move your body, how you talk to people, how you, you know, the clothes that you choose to wear, whether they're tight or revealing or not, it's about what you want.
Yeah.
And how you want to express yourself. I think, yeah, I just think there's so many, like, and that's why the work that, you know, that we do, I think, is so important, because it goes to the core of it all.
Yes.
If you can be your most vulnerable and powerful in your sexual expression,
yes,
the ripple effect,
yes,
is just phenomenal. Like, if, yes, you can be that in your most, where you are the most terrified of rejection and, yes, being embarrassed, imagine what you could do in the workplace or, yes, in the supermarket.
Yeah. I think that one of the reasons that I love focusing on sexuality and sensuality is because it is that deepest, most vulnerable, primal part of us that you have to, when you focus there, you have to go through all of the other layers.
Yeah.
And exactly. So when you bring wholeness and alignment and acceptance and joy to that place, it naturally will, as you say, ripple out into everything else, into career, into relationships, into how you take care of your body and so on.
Absolutely. And I think it's, you know, I was just thinking, you know, it's no different for men, woman, however people identify. Like, this is across the board. It's not, you know, we live in a society where men have no idea how to behave or conduct themselves sexually or pleasure, like in a state of pleasure or, you know, and I'm just thinking, going back to the health side of things, like prostate cancer is one of the biggest things for men in our society now, older men. And, you know, what is the prostate? You know, it's this incredible source of pleasure and this place within a man that, God forbid, he access, because, you know, there's all sorts of things we would say about him then. But it's, you know, and you can see it traveling through society and the implications of men being cut off from their pleasure and from their ability to freely express themselves. It's, it, you know, just as it's coming through with women, it is with men as well. And I think there's so much that can be done for anyone and everyone to tap into that connection and that freedom in sexual expression in every aspect of their lives.
Yeah.
That could really, really change.
Like, if we personally and collectively for all genders come back into alignment with the true beautiful nature of our sexuality and our sensuality, the ripple effect would be tremendous.
And going back to the fact that it's natural.
Yes.
Like, it's who we are.
Yes.
You know, and that's, and again, one of my online programs, we spend a module looking at what I call our erotic roots.
Yeah.
Like, going back to our imprinting, we look at the limbic imprinting system and look at how, as children, there is this innate natural curiosity, sexual curiosity, that all children explore.
Yeah.
And it's not until they get caught by an adult.
Yes.
And that we switch it off. But it's, I think it's really important to acknowledge it's natural. It's who we are to be sexual beings.
Yes.
And it's, you know, and that's, therefore, that's why we suffer when we switch it off.
Yes. Yeah. And that, I've also read that even, there's even been documentation of babies in the womb touching their genitals. It kind of, to me, it comes back to this idea of just saying yes to your body, rather than, it's like an innate trust in your body and its instincts. And we do need to develop wisdom and discernment to understand, you know, if your body's instinct is to punch someone in the face in the moment, you need a little bit of discernment there.
Yeah.
But the, when you really learn the language of your body and say yes to it, it's so life affirming. And like that, it doesn't make sense to me that our bodies would be designed with exactly. innate flaws that we would have to manage and control from our thinking brains so hard.
That's right. And I mean, you know, you look at the clitoris, we have a piece of anatomy that has no other purpose other than sensation and pleasure.
Yes.
Like, why would that exist?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Would you like to describe briefly the full structure of the clitoris for anyone listening who might not be familiar?
Yeah. So, well, it's again, it's one of those things that even though I'm a trained health professional, even with the work that I do now, there's still a lot of ambiguity, if you like, around what actually is the structure of the clitoris.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, where one of the original, what I was taught as a midwife is that it's an ending that has thousands of nerve endings in it. It's a piece of anatomy that has thousands of nerve endings in it, which has actually been come to be disproven that it has three main nerve endings that reach it that create different sensations. I think the most important thing with the clitoris is that little teeny tiny button is just the tip of her.
Yes.
It's like the iceberg. Yes. So behind that, she then reaches down and she's got arms that go all the way down the labia, which means that our labia are actually highly sensitive as well. And, you know, behind her is what we have, these bulbs, the vestibule bulbs, which I also love is a very Catholic word as well. and, you know, and so behind the back of the clitoris actually forms the G-spot, so that the area where the vestibules meet and behind the clitoris there. So it's, you know, it's not this one little spot that has sensation. It's all of that area. And so the clitoris and the whole area is generally connected with two main nerve systems. So the pudendal nerve. And
the pelvic nerve.
Yeah, but it has a name. My pregnancy brain is betraying me right now. And what those two nerve endings are connected through different ways, so they rely on different types of stimulation. So the pudendal nerve is very much connected to the vaginal canal and the deeper tissues, and it responds to pressure touch as opposed to the other nerves, which respond to friction and light touch. So that's why different areas of our anatomy respond pleasurably to different ways of being touched. So it's really about learning, you know, which area responds to what and how your body actually works to achieve the pleasurable states.
And like you mentioned before, if you go internally, the vagus nerve connecting to the cervix is that your understanding as well?
Oh, the vagus nerve. Oh my god. Yeah, absolutely. It's those deeper structures that respond to that different.
And it's like exciting to me also to have that whole library. That's kind of it. But like to have all the options, all the different flavors that we can play with.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. And I think it's so important for women to play with it, to self-explore.
Yes.
Because, like I said, there's so much that we don't know about. You know, there's so much controversy and misinformation and just bad information around, you know, even female ejaculation, for example. Like, does it come out the urethra or doesn't it come out the urethra? Is it pee or isn't it pee? Does it come out the two little, like, there's two little glands either side of the urethral opening? And, you know, and there's some will say this, some will say that, and so I think it's so important to get to know your own anatomy and really understand how your body works.
I I could keep going for another like 2 hours or longer. Could you share, we're gonna move towards wrapping up, but if you could share with us where you're at right now and how people can work with you and find you in the future.
Yeah.
And then I've got one more question for you after that.
Okay. Cool. So where I'm at right now. So, I'm 35 weeks pregnant with my first baby. So she will be here hopefully before Christmas. And that has been a whirlwind of a ride. She was not planned, expected, or in any way, shape, or form anticipated. My partner and I were quite a new relationship, and she decided to come along and be a part of that. And so that's been a really interesting process for me, because I came back to – so I normally live in Bali with my partner, and I came back to Australia in March because of Corona, thinking that it would be for a month or two and everything would be fine. And I got back to Australia just as they introduced the hotel quarantine. So I went into there, and then I discovered in quarantine that I was pregnant.
Oh my goodness. While you were stuck alone in a hotel room.
Yes. Yes.
Oh my God.
and cause I know my body, and I just knew, because my period wasn't due yet. Like, it wasn't even late. It was not even due. So I, in the hotels, they gave us a little shopping list, and they said, you know, if you need deodorant, shampoo, conditioner, it's like pregnancy test. And sure enough, yeah, it was positive. I was like, fuck, okay. All right. So of course I bawled my eyes out, and my partner just grinned from ear to ear, because he's just so excited and he wants to be a dad more than anything. So like, all right, let's do this. So unfortunately, that has meant that I have had to stay in Australia, and he can't get into the country because he's not an Australian citizen. So that's been a huge, huge journey for both of us. Doing this pregnancy on my own, essentially, and the birth as well. I have my family around me, thank goodness, and some beautiful midwives. But it's been really, really deep journey that and you know, and I think about all the things that I'm missing out on. Like, just even things like having sex while I'm pregnant. I won't get to experience that. So I'm really quite upset about, but at the same time, I get the opportunity to deepen my own self-pleasure and connection with my pussy and my yoni and my body through this. And, you know, one of my favorite things, like, each month probably I just get a mirror and check in and see how she's looking, because she changes.
Oh, wow.
Especially during pregnancy, and seeing like how much more like swollen she's becoming, and her colors are changing, and it's just, oh, it's really, really beautiful actually to do that for myself, and just embracing my body. And, you know, I'm a plus size woman, and that's a big part of my business, is inclusivity and representing different and not the mainstream. And it's been such a beautiful add on to my own body love and embracing, and, you know, really embracing my growing belly and all of that, and just really loving it in a whole new way, in a whole new level, which is beautiful. So, but what that means is that I have just started maternity leave for my business. I've just wrapped up the practitioner training for this year. So I've got some beautiful new graduates stepping out into the world right
Congratulations.
Now. Thank you.
So it's many things exciting. to celebrate.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And they're all over the world, which I'm so excited about. We've got New Zealand and Germany and Australia and all over. So it's very exciting. So unfortunately, that means that I will have no courses happening until March 2021, because I really want to give myself this space to kind of transition into motherhood. So, yeah, as of March 2021, I will have all of my courses back up and running. I will be back in Bali, hopefully, and offering yoni massage there. And the next practitioner training will be happening probably about June or July 2021. The dates are yet to be confirmed, but so at the moment my priority is switching off, going within, and going within and birthing this little human.
Wow. That is, that's, yeah, and just, I think that that's hitting me on a nonverbal level. it's coming out like, but yeah. Just, yeah, it actually, maybe I don't even need to say much because it feels like words would diminish the impact of what you shared.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah. It's definitely been epic. at the end of last year, Temple of She just kind of reached this whole new height and it was just phenomenal. And I was like, wow, where can it go from here? Well, since you asked.
So do you ever like ask the universe for something and then you get it and you're like, oh, fuck.
Yeah. Yeah, totally. Exactly. Yeah. So it's been, you know, I kind of surrendered having children last year, actually. I was like, it's not something for me, and I'm loving my business, my life, the way that I've created my life, and I'm happy without that. Mm-hmm. And then here she is. So yeah, it's been interesting, and it was, you know, it's physically it's fine, mentally and emotionally it's been a huge growth opportunity. Like I didn't announce my pregnancy to the world until I was about 20 weeks, so halfway, because I really spent that first 20 weeks just going, what the fuck am I doing? Mm. How am I going to do this? Is this the right thing? Mm. Am I being stupid? What am I going to do? Oh my God, my life's going to change. Like all of the things. And it was really, really tough, really tough.
Yeah.
And then when I sort of announced it to the world, it was like, okay, yep, I'm doing this. This is happening. And yeah, so since then it's been this incredible just process of embracing and loving and just seeing where it can take me and what's going to happen. Yeah.
I really appreciate that you shared that there were doubts and questions and that you really grappled with it for a while, because I think it's our work is not about like, do this, connect to your body and you will never doubt yourself again, or you will never you will always know what to do, you will always be orgasming. It's not about that. But there's like an undercurrent of resilience I think that comes from being grounded in your body and your sexuality. Absolutely. That can carry you through those times.
Yeah, definitely. And I'm so grateful for that. I'm so grateful for the work that I do and the women that I have been teaching in this pregnancy, because it as I said, like they've been my medicine. They have held me and reminded me of what I need in each moment. And, you know, to go out and bathe my yoni in the sun and to put in a yoni egg, even though it's not recommended in pregnancy, and all this shit, and just to self-pleasure and to feel and to look at her and to be fully present to what I'm feeling and to be okay with that. Mm. So, yeah, I'm very grateful that I've had my sexuality to lean on through this process, definitely.
That's so beautiful. I could see your face light up too as you were talking about these women you've been working with.
Yeah, they're pretty special.
My last question for you is that if there was one thing that you would love people to take away from this conversation, what would that be?
Everything.
I know. They've listened to the whole thing to get to this point, most likely.
That's right. Yeah. I think the most important thing is that it's worth it. It's not easy, but it's worth it. And it doesn't have to be the big mind-blowing experiences. It's the subtleties, and it's just allowing the little things to unfold and acknowledging the impact that they actually do have for you, and acknowledging yourself for actually saying yes. Mm-hmm. And I think that's such a big deal, is we tend to brush things off, especially when we find the courage to finally do something or see a practitioner or masturbate for the first time ever mm-hmm. or buy a yoni egg or whatever. Mm-hmm. Like, acknowledge yourself for that.
Yeah.
You
yeah.
said yes to this. That's huge.
Yeah.
I think, you know, you're in the driver's seat and praise yourself for that. It's yeah. yeah. Yeah, that's a big deal.
It is a big deal. I think the last thing I'd like to leave people with is that your sexuality, your sensuality doesn't have to look like anyone else's. Yeah. And to explore yourself and find within yourself, what does it look like for you? Yeah. And it doesn't have to look like anything you've ever mm-hmm. seen before. yeah. But it can, yeah. but that it, yeah. There's no need for it to look like anything in particular.
Yeah, yeah that's so important. So important. Yeah. Yeah, beautiful.
And finally, I would like to invite anyone listening to, as Amy moves through the last few weeks of pregnancy and into birth and motherhood, to just send her some love and strength and whatever good vibes you feel called to send her. So as people are listening, you'll get these little flashes of yeah, love being sent your way.
Yeah, very welcome and much appreciated. Yeah, thank you very much. Yeah,
thank you for sharing your joy and your passion and your wisdom. I'm so excited to share this conversation.
Yeah, absolutely. As I said at the beginning, I just any opportunity to talk about anything like this, it's yeah, I love it, because it's so important. It needs to be talked about.
Yeah
and it's fun.
I would do it solely for the purpose of fun.
Yeah,
it's worth it solely absolutely. For the purpose of fun. It brings me great pleasure to imagine you out there listening to Reawakening Love and Power with Carol Ann. You can find Amy on her website at templeofshe.com.au and on Instagram, Facebook, and YouTube as Temple of She. Links are in the episode description if that's useful to you. Recently, she's been sharing her experiences as she moves through her pregnancy, and I'm looking forward to following everything that she has to share about that journey and as she returns to work next year. If you're curious about working with me in my homecoming coaching program to come home to your body and your sensual sexual nature in a gentle and trauma-aware way, you can book a free one-hour clarity call. It's a no-pressure conversation where we explore what it is you really want and if it's in alignment for us to work together. Find more information and book in on my website at carolann.com.au. You can also connect with me on Instagram as at carolannalive. Please subscribe or follow if you're listening on Spotify, and share this podcast with anyone you think might benefit from it. And if this podcast is meaningful to you, I have a request. Could you give it a review wherever you're listening to it? I talk about pussy a little too much to be able to advertise easily on social media, so your shares and reviews really help to spread the word and help me and my guests make a bigger impact. May this episode be a glowing campfire calling you back into your body, the sacred cauldron in your pelvis, and your power.